Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Beauty Talk here on Blog Talk Radio for today, October 29th. I'm your host, Janice Tennell, and as always, I'm joined by my sister, Denise.
Hello.
And tonight, our guest is Drew Sidora, actress singer Drew Sidora. But before we speak to Drew, I just want to remind you all that if you want to call in and join the conversation, you want to ask Drew a question, you can dial 914-803-4399. Again, the number is 914-803-4399, or you can email us your questions at info@illusionsbeauty.com. Also, join us tonight in the chat room. I want to say hello to Tina because I know she's in the chat room. She's a supporter and always tuning in, so thank you, Tina. And also want to let you all know that in about 2 weeks, both my sister and I will be working on a set of Stop the Yard 2, and it's going to be very difficult to bring you all the show on Thursday night. So we're going to be switching our day, and we haven't finalized which day of the week it'll be, but hopefully you all will continue to tune in and join us, and we'll keep you posted as to the new day next week. So, Drew, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hey, everybody.
And why don't you just start off by just letting our audience know, for those who don't, a little bit about who you are and what you've been up to and how you got started in with your wonderful career.
Well, I am from Chicago originally. I actually moved to L.A. right out of high school. I made a deal with my parents that if I did well in school, they would let me come to L.A. to follow my passion and getting my feet wet in the acting, theatrical industry, as well as music. So I did so well that I graduated early, honors, and got to come out to L.A. So I had the whole semester and the summer to really get my feet wet and see what was out here for me, take all the opportunities. So in being out here, I was first signed to a group at Men's Entertainment, Babyface's company, called Midi Five. The group didn't work out, but it was great because it allowed me to work with a lot of reputable artists and producers in L.A. just to kind of give me that confidence and the knowledge of the industry. After that, I started doing a lot of theatrical work, working on What I Like About You, Never Die Alone. People might know me from White Chicks, That's So Raven, Step Up, Motive, Vivica Fox, which we did in Atlanta, and most recently Wild Hogs with John Travolta, Martin Lawrence, The Game, of course, which is now on BET, Frankenhood, which is coming out, actually airing on BET on Halloween night, and then I've got three other films coming out: Farmhouse with Kelly Hugh from X-Men 2, which is a horror movie I did, that's available on DVD now. I also did B-Girl, which is a breakdancing film that'll be out November. And then The Killing of Wendy was a film I did in Africa. Amazing film we shot in Johannesburg for 45 days. And
wow. It's
got 10 beautiful actresses: Vanessa Bell Calloway, Rachel True from Half and Half, Bianca Lawson from The Best Man. Just so many, I can't name them all. Just you'll know their faces. They've done a lot of work in the industry. But that film, I have to say, I'm most proud of, because of the fact that we did it in Africa. It goes into the dark side of the industry, like as far as what we have to deal with, that a lot of people might hear about but really don't know exists, about drugs and alcohol and the casting couch and blackmail and blackballing and those types of things. So that I'm really, really excited about. The trailer's actually up on YouTube. So anybody,
okay, and what's that called again?
It's called The Killing of Wendy. The Killing of Wendy.
The Killing of Wendy. Okay.
Now you said something that got my attention. You said the casting couch. Can you go into that a bit?
Well, there is, as the movie displays, you know, things where people might, you know, the industry is about making choices. Life is about making choices. And in this industry, sometimes you're faced with, okay, you can get certain things if you sacrifice certain morals and certain things you might believe in. So, meaning, okay, if you want this job, you know, there's directors, producers, and execs that might ask you to do all kinds of things and basically selling that talent for sexual activity or intimacy and things like that. Certain people might think they can get ahead doing those types of things, but in that respect, your talent goes overlooked. So the movie shows that because it turns into a murder mystery, so it kind of goes to the extreme levels of what could happen in those situations, and someone comes up dead, and then it's everybody's kind of under investigation to find out what happened. So it kind of shows you the extremities of your choices and decisions, how that can being on drugs and things like that.
Okay. Is this coming to the theaters, or how can...
Right now, well, it's interesting. Robbie Reed's one of the U.S. Producers. Because it was an African film, it was shot by an African crew, South African directors, South African producers. Mm-hmm. They got all American actresses. So as far as them selling it to an American distributor, that's the process that they're in now. But the trailer's on YouTube, so we're asking everyone to go to the site and leave comments and, you know, just let us know what you think about it, because it's going to, in all, help, you know, sell the film to either come out in theaters, which we're all seeming like it's going to go that direction. But, you know, the people really have a voice, as we saw in The Game. I think right now people are recognizing we have a voice. So if you do like it, if you love something, if you speak out about it or blog about it, those things, you know, don't go ignored. So.
Right.
Right. Now, you mentioned also, you mentioned The Game now on BET. When you say now on BET, I know that they show a lot of the old episodes. Are you also, speaking of the show, still airing new episodes on BET, or just you're talking about the old episodes?
We'll have to see about that.
Okay.
Of course, it's syndicated. But, yeah, I think, like I said, people definitely petition and definitely help in that respect. So I just urge everyone to continue to do that, and very soon we'll be able to hopefully see it come back.
Cool. So tell us about your music. What are you currently working on?
I have to say, I just signed my deal. Actually, December 08, I inked the deal with Slip and Slide, and it's only been not even a year yet, and I'm so excited about the project because I have to say, Milk, he's the one that signed me over there. Thankful to him for believing in the vision and seeing the vision. Already we've got the first single set to release, the top of 2010, January. So I'm really excited about that. I got a chance to work with a lot of phenomenal producers, one being Lamb, who produced the first single called Juke It. It's incredible. He's phenomenal. He's worked with Jasmine Sullivan, who produced the Need You Bad record. Keisha Cole's Let It Go. So working with him, we've got a lot of the record, a lot of the album pretty much done. So I'm just really excited. It's coming out fall of next year, and I'm really gearing up for that. We just got the single in Melrose Place, so people will be able to hear it there first. And then it'll be on local radio stations January. I'm just really blessed, really excited about that. It's been a long journey. People know me from The Game, know, okay, I have my music in The Game. We got a chance to show that. And Step Up, I got a chance to sing, I got a chance to have songs in the soundtrack, but this album is really letting people get to know me as a person, what I've been through, whether it's me being in love, me going through heartbreak, all of those things that's real to me. I'm opening up and I'm talking about it in this album, and I'm so excited for that, for everyone to really get to know what I'm about, where I come from, and all of those things.
Now, you said the album was coming out when?
Fall of 2010.
Okay, so fall 2010, and your first single's coming out in January?
Yes, January it'll be out.
Okay.
And you mentioned Step Up. You mentioned the game and Step Up where you did your music. Was Step Up the first time you were able to do your music while acting?
Actually, was it? I believe it was. Step Up was the first project I got to showcase all of my talent. Doing the soundtrack. Okay. I got a chance to work with Mario on the soundtrack and perform in the movie. So it was great.
Cool. So let's switch gears for just a minute and talk about beauty for a second.
Yes.
What's your daily beauty regimen? What do you do every day?
Well, every night I definitely cleanse my face before I go to sleep and moisturize it. In the morning, I use Dermalogica products, so the cleansers, the SPF block, and the moisturizer. They have different moisturizers, but it'd be oily, dry, normal skin. My skin is normal to oily, so I use the products for that. And then I will use the under-eye intensive care treatment or some Dermalogica line as well. And that's basically it.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned the SPF that was in the product, because a lot of times people don't pay attention to sunscreen.
Yeah.
And the importance of using sunscreen, so I'm glad you kind of mentioned that. So what about makeup? What do you do for makeup? Are you a makeup wearer, like, you know, every day, or is it just for when you're performing, or?
I do not like to wear makeup. If I don't have to wear it, I would rather, because my skin is so oily, and for people out there that might have oily skin, you know, as you use more makeup and foundation, especially when it's warmer and hot outside, that tends to clog my pores. So if I don't have to wear it, I will rock out with some, take my Posner stick, which Posner is actually the line from the 80s. I order it online, but they have a really nice toner bronzer stick that I'll use on my cheeks, and that's it, and some lip gloss, Illusion Cosmetics, the Drew lip gloss, and I'm good to go. but if I do, you know, have to wear makeup, it's red carpet or it's event, party, performance, and things like that, my makeup artist will generally use MAC products and Bobbi Brown lines of foundations and things like that. So, but if I don't have to wear it, you will not find me. I don't even really know how to apply makeup, because I really just don't even want to learn, because I don't want anybody to have to say, you can do your makeup, you know. I really, if I don't have to wear it, I would rather not.
Right. Wow.
You said you don't even want to learn.
Right.
So I guess that eliminates the next question, which was, what's in your makeup bag? Basically, all you have is your Posner stick and your Illusion lip gloss, and that's it. You really don't even want a makeup bag.
Yeah, you know, as an actress, you can't get caught out just terribly bogus, but, you know, I do carry the Posner bronzer, like I said, the lip gloss, mascara. You know, that'll be the most I'll do. If I have to do concealer, MAC concealer, under the eyes for those days we don't get our 8 hours in.
Right.
And, you know, that's basically it. Especially being in L.A., what's so great is you can throw your shades on and keep going.
Exactly. Now, let me ask you this, because you do spend some time back in Chicago. So do you find that your skin changes from, like, when you're in LA, and then if you fly back to Chicago during like the same season, let's just say it's springtime or summer, you know, you're in LA, and do you experience the skin then, and then, you know, flying back to Chicago, have you experienced anything different, or is your skin
same? Definitely, when I go to Chicago, my skin turns lighter because it's not as much sun out, and drier, because
right.
in Chicago it gets to be about negative 30 sometimes in the wintertime. So I have to switch up the products that I use. I'll go to like a Pond's cream, which is a heavier moisturizer, so my skin doesn't start to scale and dry and all of those types of things.
So although being oily, you still find that in the wintertime you still can get a little drier.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Cool. Now let's talk about the Lustre Lip Gloss from Illusions Cosmetics that's named after you.
Yes.
Tell us about how does it make you feel to have a product named after you? And describe to the listeners the color and just give us your opinion on the actual gloss itself. Like, how does it feel to you? That kind of thing.
I honestly have to say I'm honored and humbled to have my own lip gloss in my name. that you don't get every day, you know?
Right, right.
And being a woman, you know, we don't want to be caught up with our lips chapped and dry. It's not sexy. So to have that and to carry that and expose that to other young teenage women, young adult women, women of all ages, it's just it's very humbling to have that. It's just an honor. So that is first and foremost. But the color itself, what I love about it so much is that it's very natural.
Mm-hmm.
You can wear it if you're going to the mall. You can wear it if you're going out to a picnic. You can wear it if you're going out on a date to dinner. And it acts as a moisturizer as well. What I found is that some lip glosses have a tendency to be very, very heavy or your hair will stick to it.
Right.
Without the Illusions Cosmetics gloss being too oily, too glossy, it's just a perfect blend of both where it's moisturizing. At the same time, you can still drink, you know, your drink with it. It doesn't come off. It lasts for all day pretty much. I don't have to maybe reapply it except for maybe twice in one day.
Right.
It's a nude, natural color with like a shimmer gloss over the top, which I love because it just gives it a natural look to it.
And one of the reasons I just wanted to say, you know, we call this collection the Young Hollywood Collection, and we chose people that to name the glosses after because we thought that the people that we chose were young ladies that we've either worked with or that we knew, that, and most of them we've worked with, that we knew that were up and coming or not necessarily up and coming in a sense that they're new to Hollywood, but kind of like more so on the rise, we should say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason why we chose the young ladies that we chose. And, again, let me just name them. They are Drew Sidora, we're speaking with tonight, Megan Good, Khloe Kardashian, Malika, and Khadija. How do you say their last name?
Hawk.
Right. So these were just young ladies that we worked with that we saw that were out doing things, you know, kind of making moves.
Did you forget Lauren London?
Oh, I'm sorry, and Lauren London. That's right, she's 6'5", and Lauren London. So that's the reason behind the people that we chose. I like the fact that you said that it doesn't stick to your hair. It's not sticky, and that's one of the things that we get from several people who've tried the gloss. That's one of the things that they'll say is that it doesn't stick to your hair. So And I can even say for myself from other glosses that I've used, that's one problem with a lot of lip glosses that are kind of sticky or tacky, that your hair will stick to it. But you said something that for the first time that I haven't heard anybody else say before, and that was that it's moisturizing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time I've ever heard somebody say that it was moisturizing. They'll always say that, you know, they like it. It's not thick. It's not heavy. Doesn't stick to your hair. Your hair doesn't stick to it. But that's the first time that I've heard someone say that it was moisturizing. So I'm glad to hear that. Drew, how do you feel, you know, because you worked in television and film, how do you feel Hollywood, I always ask this question to some people, how do you feel Hollywood defines beauty? Especially when it's, how do you think Hollywood defines beauty? And then I guess I kind of want to also know your opinion, I guess, where do you feel black actresses fit in that definition?
Yeah. I mean, I believe Hollywood in an unrealistic way because Hollywood, you know, that world is you're reading people on screen, on television, the small screen, on the big screen. So how you may look in life doesn't necessarily mean that's how you'll read on screen. So the industry will read you how you come across through, you know, the camera. So it's not, it's a very unrealistic, you know, way of beauty, because you can see someone in person and they look completely different on screen. And you hear things like, okay, well, you're too tall or you're too short, you know, you're too big, you're too small, you're too light, you're too dark. And really, they're comparing that to whatever lighting they have, what type of cameras they're using. So I know a lot of people may beat up on themselves, or they try to stay within, you know, that look of how you might camera, but it's, I try to always remember it's an unrealistic way of looking at beauty. I believe that the way we look, when you look at someone in front of you in physical and just existing in life regularly, I believe that's the true beauty of how we were all supposed to look. But, of course, when you're on screen and you've got makeup and you've got posts and all those type of things, you might look and say, oh, this person is beautiful, this person innovates beauty, but they look nothing like that in person because it's gone through posts, gone through CGI, gone through a number of things, and still, yes, they are beautiful on screen. So it's just two ways. And I've always gotten this conversation because a lot of actresses, a lot of models are always, we get it really hard because you might not be a fat person or a big girl or even thick, but you won't get some roles because on camera you look too thick or too voluptuous, as they'll say.
Mm-hmm.
So really don't let that define you as a person, how you might look to someone else in real life. So I think those are the differences. And as far as African-American women go, it is a little more difficult because naturally we are a little bit more curvaceous, a little more voluptuous. So a lot of times it's certain roles that you will not be able to get if you have to play up against another type of actor or actress, you know, being of another ethnicity, you know, exactly. That's always going to be a setback for us. But it allows us to do other roles, allows us to play strong women roles, you know, mother roles, love interest roles. It still allows us to be leading ladies. So I don't look at it as a negative or a setback, but it is a realistic thing that we have to deal with.
Wow. I mean, like when you were talking about how the actors don't look the same, like in person as they do on film, I think about some of the actresses that I've worked with, like, you know, before I ever worked with them, I'll see them in a film and they'll look like, you know, medium to dark brown in a movie. And then when you know that you're going to be working with that actress, you kind of think, okay, I have a, you know, great idea of what her coloring is like or whatever. But then when you meet them, they are almost light brown, like almost a light skin almost. And, you know, I know that sometimes, you know, the director of photography or whatever will light them where they look a little darker, but... And the actress that I'm thinking of is Gabrielle Union. Like, when I've seen her on some films, and then when I've actually worked with her in person, it's like, she's the extreme. Like, she
really?
she was way lighter than me. And I'm,
wow.
You know, I'm brown skin, you know, but not dark, and was lighter than me, where in movies she looked, you know, way darker. And I was just wondering if that was... You know, if that was them wanting a darker girl, but I guess, you know, she was the actress who, you know, that really played the part like they wanted, but they just wanted her to be darker. I don't know. I'm just wondering if that's ever been a situation.
Definitely. They definitely do that because it's all about, you know, movies are like art, you know, and every color in a scene is thought out, from the color of the to the costume designer having to check with the director to see, is this the okay color for them to wear, you know, working with whatever the couch versus what the other actors in the scene are wearing. All of that is well thought out and already planned. So when they get ready to light the person, they have to make sure that everything, I guess, blends together and is a great match when you're looking at the scene on the screen. So as far as, okay, we're going to make her a little darker or a little lighter, because I know a couple of projects have been, that's the rate of being lighter. Anyone playing around her had to be toned a little darker. concerned. So it always ends up being who you're playing up against, or like I said, the colors in the scene, making sure you pop out, and with, whether it's you being lighter that's going to make you pop out in the scene, or you, you know, being darker, you know, that's going to make you pop out in the scene. That's what they're going to roll with, and then throughout the film, they're going to make sure that that lighting stays consistent. So you can't look light in one scene and dark in the next scene. So they go with the same light. It's going to be her lighting setting, and we're going to roll with that from scene to scene.
Right.
So
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting. When you're working on a film, have you ever had an experience, a bad experience? I remember one of our very first shows we talked about this. Have you ever had a bad experience with the makeup artist finding or matching your skin tone when it comes to foundation?
Oh, yeah.
Please don't say on mother. Drew, please don't say on mother.
No. I have to say, I look at the screen on mode and I'm like, yo, she beat my face. But you're not always that lucky to look like that. Specifically one project, I won't say the name, but it was a predominantly white cast, white, you know, crew. So unfortunately, me being the only African-American actress on the project, them having Caucasian makeup artists, not to say that Caucasian makeup artists cannot, you know, work on, African-American faces, but on this particular set, it was horrific because they only had lighter, foundations in their case.
Right.
So my face was lighter than my hands. I mean, it looked decent in the mirror. Like, I could tell it was lighter. She tried to blend some things and bronze my face out. But then my face looked light in a lot of areas and then orange in other areas because she just put the bronzer over it. So when I'm looking at the person, I don't know if anyone else notices, but it read even more horrific on screen because my hands would be one color and my face was another color. And she tried to do my thing because where the chest is, you know, and the shoulders, you could definitely see the difference. So I don't know if I'm the only one that notices. I'm sure makeup artists out there would notice. If you saw the project, but it definitely was not a good look.
So what do you do?
Kind of greenish.
Oh, wow.
Well, but on that project, I mean, everyone said I looked beautiful, and it wasn't until, you know, I saw the finished product that I was able to really see. I knew looking in the mirrors it wasn't right, but then at that point in my career, it was a thing of, okay, we need you on set. You look good. We know what we're doing. So we got to keep it moving. When
right.
In actuality, when I saw it on TV, I'm like, I knew it wasn't right. Look how thick I look on screen. So it was one of those things that, you know, you live, you learn, and as you go in the industry, now I'm kind of more on top of that. Like, I know how I should look in the mirror. That way I never have to experience that again. But it was really bad.
Well, do you bring your own foundation now just in case, or how do you think you
I
would
do.
Handle the situation? Okay.
Some makeup artists that do my red carpets, they will actually put some foundations in a case for me to carry. And it's a perfect blend. That way I don't have to worry about going out to the store trying to match up myself, because that's going to be a failed mission anyway. But I'll be able to get that, and then when I do go to set, I'm able to take that at least to give them a point of reference for them to properly
right.
blend it. So it definitely works for me. Yeah.
Right. Wow. You know, we've heard some horror stories. So, and you know, the thing about that is when, like you said, you know, you weren't at the point of your career where you, I guess, really say much to them, and you probably just like, okay, they're professionals, they know what they're doing, I'm just going to go with what they're saying. But my thing is, when you saw yourself on TV, at that point, of course, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, because I know I've heard other people share stories that said, you know, they've had a bad experience. They even said something to the makeup artist. I guess the makeup artist tried to change or tried to do the best that she could. And then when they
mm-hmm.
saw the film, the makeup artist even saw the film and saw how bad it looked, that they even had to apologize to say, you know, I apologize for this. Because, you know, once you're done, you're done. And I guess, like, the director and, you know, all the people that's working in post, you know, some issues they may notice and fix and color correct. But sometimes if it's a director that doesn't really, you know much about makeup or that's not really their concern, I should say, for the, you know, the directors where makeup is not really a big concern, they may not notice it. And it just slips right past, and then, you know, you're stuck with this final end result. So, it is definitely something that, you know, if you definitely feel comfortable speaking up, then it's definitely something that you should speak up about. Or, like I said, once you've gone through that first experience, now you just travel with something, you know.
Right, and now you know, you work on enough sets, you know how your face should look.
Yeah.
Right.
So. Now, Drew, we have a question from the chat room, and they want to know, the character that you played on the game, how much of that character is you? I mean, although you were playing yourself, but how much of yourself were you playing, or were you really being Drew Sidor on that show?
The show was definitely a character to bring another character, so it comes across as realistic as possible. And basically, as far as the artist, the similarities of my music, that was definitely real. I think in a lot of times, though, when you're dealing in relationships, you have always been at that point in your life where you're a woman. You have feelings for a guy. A guy lies to you. I always ask all the ladies, like, you've been some time in your life, whether it was high school, grammar school, as a young adult, or even in a marriage, you know, you found yourself being in a relationship with someone that just flat out lied to you, either said they were not involved with someone else or didn't tell you they had a girlfriend or didn't tell you they were married, and then you find out otherwise. So I was on the other side of that. Tia was on the side of she was the one that was being cheated on with. But in the beginning of the show, you know, we didn't know. I didn't know he had a fiance. And I think the real part of it is that once I found out, it was having to accept that. Being emotional, man, and having to accept that I can no longer see him, talk to him, or be with him, that was where you got to see the real side. And I think that was really real for Drew, me, the person, because that emotion is so real. You know, every woman goes through that. And then once he comes back and says, okay, me and her broke up, then of course you want to believe, okay, you know, now we can be together. And I think every woman, if you ask yourself, you've been in that situation at some point in life. So I think that's why people love the show so much, is because it was real. But honestly, being called, okay, obviously, they have to give you a title of the show. So I'll take the home record title.
Right.
But really, when you look deeper into the character, it wasn't that if she just was a home wrecker. A home wrecker is when a man tells you, look, I got a woman, and you're like, well, y'all know you got a girl with me. We'll keep it on the low. Like, I never wanted, you know, it to come across that way, because that's really not what the character was created or intended to come across. And then a lot of people that really watch the show, they'll go, you know what, you were the victim, and that's why we even had in one episode, it was really important. I got a chance to work with Mara Brockett-Kill, executive producer, and really work on each storyline and each episode to make it as real as possible. And we created the redemption episode when I got to kind of tell Derwin how I was hurt in the situation as well, how I was a victim as well, and I don't think people really saw that.
Right.
And that episode kind of let people see, okay, yo, she's real, she's going through this emotion, all right, I can identify with that.
Right.
In some cases, yes, but in others, no.
Because you can't really turn those feelings off, although, you know, once you do know that he has a girlfriend or fiance, you can't just turn it off just because you know that.
Right. Exactly. And you can walk away from it, which that happens to the show, but when we saw each other again, it was the old feeling back and the let's catch up, and then finding out, okay, they're having problems and they're not getting now, you know, by that time the wedding was called off. So, you know, you're kind of like, okay, well, he's single now, like, telling me. So you got to see both sides, and then you got to see how a man is, whether he's an athlete or just a man, how he's in love with one woman, but he's not getting all the things he needs. And then just at that time, he's getting maybe what he's needing in far fulfillment, and he's putting his attention in that, and it's unhealthy, you know, in any case. But it's something that we all go through, and I think
right.
that is why I loved doing that show so much.
Now, if the show comes back and if your character comes back, how would you like to see that character develop?
Definitely like to tie up ties with Tia.
Mm-hmm.
To see how us as African American women can respect one another, to let our emotions and be women enough to support each other and understand where each other, you know, we're coming from emotionally. But I would like to see that happen because I think that's an important message to send out. Just amongst women, African American women, women as a whole, I think that's what we need is to see that camaraderie amongst, you know, strong women.
Mhm. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, Drew, if you could pick one singer, let's say they're going to choose a singer who they're going to do her life story for film, who would you want to be?
If I would want to be who now?
Now, I'm saying if they were going to decide to, if somebody was going to do a film on a singer's life,
yes,
any singer, what singer would you want to play?
I would want to play Minnie Riperton.
Minnie Riperton?
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
They recently did a story on TV One about her life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you got a chance to catch that.
I didn't see it.
But when I tell you that people don't even know, you know, just from her coming, and it's so close, it's a lot of things like her coming, she actually went to the same high school as my mom.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Singing group. My mom actually managed a singing group that performed with Minnie Riperton's group a lot in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So just coming from that city and showing the struggles and was not a hard, it's not an easy thing to begin with. So especially back then when African American women weren't allowed in certain places, certain establishments,
right.
to show that, show Chicago, which right now is so prevalent with Obama, you know, just really highlighting that city, showing
right.
the Motor Road District. Is where Minnie Riperton's whole career began, which is where the Shy Lights recorded, where the original Sony was. George Daniels, who was like the godfather of music in Chicago, managed her in the beginning of the career. And then there's some personal storylines that I won't get into, you know what I mean? But
right.
it's stuff that people would want to know about her life as just
right.
a woman, going from a group to becoming a solo career, coming up through that era when it wasn't racism, but it was still a little bit of that going on as far as with entertainers. And then her marriage and just the whole story for me when I watched her True Life on TV1, just her going to the studio and creating that sound. I know now, I mean, that Kanye kind of pulled from all of the Chicago artists, the Commons, the R. Kelly's kind of were influenced by. Shy Life, all those things. I think it'd just be great for my city, and that's why I would love to play that character. Plus, growing up, that's all I listened to was Minnie Riperton.
Right, right. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. We have Maxie on the line. Hi, Maxie. How are you?
Hi.
How are
we
you?
We have 6 minutes left, Maxie.
Uh-oh. So, well, I should just, like, take two of them. I'm so excited that we have someone that's actually in front of the camera.
Exactly.
On the show this week.
Exactly.
And it's very exciting. And so I thought, you know, I eavesdropped earlier when you guys were talking about this. What is this film about, a casting couch?
Oh.
That's all I remembered.
That's not what the film is about, no.
It's called The Killing, it's called The Killing of Wendy. It's one of Drew's latest films.
Oh, okay, because I have lots to say about that. You know, I work with people all the time that experience that whole casting couch thing, and I don't know if it worked out in, like, the 40s or the 50s, but nowadays, even if you do it, you still don't get nothing out of it. Like, you still don't get the job, or
right.
you still don't get the nothing, whatever was offered to you. And what's odd is that it happens for men. A lot
oh, wow.
in the industry. And guess what? Men are not raised to value their bodies like women are. And a lot of times, men actually, I've heard story after story, I've had people crying in my chair, because I'm sort of inquisitive and I'll I'll be like, so, has anything horrible ever happened? And they will tell me, you know. And horrible things happen to men as well. There's this casting couch for them. I'm not talking about for gay men. I'm talking about...
Right, for straight men.
Yeah, and it's not women, really, that are partaking in the... You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just it's the weirdest thing.
Right.
And a lot of times they don't talk about it. And, you know, if you go to McDonald's and you apply for a job, and someone's like, okay, if you get naked and do this and that, you would sue McDonald's,
right?
When it's like a famous photographer or director or producer or something like that casting for a big project, it's the same thing. But men are so embarrassed, and they, for some reason, don't come forward, and they actually, don't ever... You know, rarely that I've ever heard of, or even ever, you know, sue or press charges. They're afraid their careers will be affected. When I have a theory that I believe that an unknown actor can never be affected by even the most famous director. Because imagine the famous directors calling around going, Joe Johnson, never hire him. Everyone's just going to say, who's Joe Johnson? But if you are suing a big director, then it's different. An unknown person can actually, if anything, ruin an established person before an established person can ruin an unknown person.
Mm-hmm.
And, but anyhow, I don't know why I got stuck on that. I'm so sorry.
That's quite all right. Before we go, Drew, I know you kind of talked a little bit about beauty and makeup and how you don't wear it, and we talked a little bit about, you know, Hollywood's definition of beauty and how African-American actresses fit into that. As we're winding down, I just wanted to ask you what beauty meant to you.
Beauty to me has always been what's on the inside. Because as we know, when we were younger, and if some of us look crazy when we were younger, as women, people will see you and go, whoa, you don't look how you look when you was a little girl, or, you know, vice versa, or as an older adult, you know, our outer beings, they always change. Your physical appearance, your hair, we perm it, we straighten it, we curl it. I mean, that, to me, is interchangeable. So I've always believed in beauty being on the inside. Because you can love somebody for the person they are. They can look decent on the outside, but their inside be so beautiful that it makes them look even more beautiful every day that you look at them. So I've always been a firm believer that, you know, if the inside isn't right, and that just goes for anything, the type of food you eat, the type of energy you carry on the inside, rest, you know, all those type of things on the inside, that's on the outside anyway. So starting with the inside, making sure that's clean, making sure that's right, making sure that you're constantly in good spirits, making sure you're putting the proper foods in your body and drinking the right kind of water to keep your system flush, making sure that you're carrying a heart load of love and genuineness and authenticity and integrity and all of those qualities, independence, strength, passion, those things are so attractive to me. So I look at those qualities before I look at anything else being on the outside, because to me that's very tangible, that's very materialistic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what I've learned. Now, when I was younger, it was different, but that's what I've honestly learned just in life in general. So those are my thoughts.
So it's not Botox and laser treatment. Thank you.
All those other things, that doesn't matter.
It's definitely not. So with that being said, thank you so much, Drew, and thank you, Maxie, for calling in. We appreciate it.
Bye. Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you, guys.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Drew.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you to all of our listeners. Again, if you liked the show and you enjoyed it, go out and rate it, and also go out and mark it as a favorite. And, again, tune in every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can join our conversation by calling 914-803-4399, or you can email your questions to info@illusionsbeauty.com. Again,
Starting in November, the second, we'll have a show on November 5th, but the week after that, we're changing our schedule just for about 5 weeks because both my sister and I will be working on Stomp the Yard 2. So we're going to be changing our schedule, and we will keep you posted as to what the new date will be, the new days, rather, will be for our show. So with that being said, good night, everybody.
Good night.